Good morning. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I want to wake you up and get you to contribute to KBOO today. We're in a little bitty membership drive. It's just today, tomorrow, the next day. It's our Valentine's drive, and so our theme is Love Beyond Borders. Amor sin fronteras, and you can join us at 877-500-5266. My whole show is going to be interspersed with that call because I really, really want you to call in. And one reason is because I feel something that I haven't felt for a while. Maybe I haven't felt it since Occupy, but people are ready to fight back. People are organizing. There's hope. I feel that thunder. It's like a distant thunder. 36 million people mobilized in 2003, and we weren't able at that time to shut down imperialism, but we did show the world that the people were opposed to U.S. imperialism, and we didn't believe the lies, and we didn't believe because of that detonation of buildings in downtown New York that we believed that we needed to go to war. We shut down Seattle before that, the WTO in 99. That was a little bit of thunder. I remember that feeling. We took every downtown. We took every downtown in 2011 for Occupy. And these moments, these movements and awakenings have their effect. I mean, all of that had its effect on occupying ICE, which started here in Portland with very brave people just going and occupying the area around the ICE building because we will not tolerate having children in cages. That is not okay. We're not going to stop. And ICE has just gotten more vicious, and Trump has gotten more vicious with their anti-human movement, with closing the borders and forcing people into desperation and death. So we can feel that. We can feel that movement. I hear that thunder somewhere deep inside me. And so I'm more determined than ever that People's Community Radio, People's Community Podcast Hub KBOO, is going to mobilize against fascism and Jim Crow policing and corporate climate omnicide, and we won't be stopped. This time we're going all the way, and I think the political process is a part of that, but KBOO is an essential part of that. I want you to join us. And if you don't join KBOO, I want you to join a movement. I want you to show up. You know, there's a lot of people who show up for this this community radio station. But I want you to do something about that feeling that you have in your heart that now is the time to move. Now is the time to make something happen. You have millions on your side. There will never be a better time to move politically, to move us to a more compassionate and rational society. Help us particularly in our fight here at KBOO against Jim Crow policing, because we here at KBOO can claim some of the thunder that elected Joanne Hardesty to the city council. There's no doubt about that. I saw lots of KBOO faces at those rallies, and I feel that fate has taken me personally by the scruff in various ways. I know I've told this story before, but way back in 1980 in Texas, I insulted a cop, and she called out the whole University of Texas police force, which back then probably still is, was armed with 357 Magnum weapons, and looked down those weapons just because the cop was mad at me, and I didn't die because I was white, and I don't think I got the message then. And so again, in 06 in Portland, I was confronted by cops who were ready to stomp me, and I realized now, and all of those were false charges, except, you know, it's true I insulted the cop, but they came up with false charges. And the difference, the reason I'm alive is because of my white skin, because I got cops angry at me. I got them to the point of drawing their weapons both times, and I didn't die. And it's like, if I believed in a God, I'm not sure if I believe exactly in a God, but if I did, then I would say that God had taken me by the scruff of the neck and shaken me and said, look, look at Jim Crow policing. Look at what people have to put up with every single day. Look at the horror. Look at the death. And I'm happy. I'm grateful that I can be part of KBOO. And we have had so many programs that have brought that out to the public and said, look, you know, we face it. It's not just a few bad apples. We have a fascist police force that makes life a living horror for black men. And there are so many other things that we do. But that's one of the things I feel very, very strongly about. And that's why you should join. That's why you should be part of KBOO. That's why you should up your pledge. If you are now pledging to KBOO, you might want to up it to get that KBOO hoodie that has a KBOO logo front and back now, and zips up and makes you feel so comfortable in this weather. That's $25 a month. And right now, we are also, I want you to understand, throughout this whole program, that I went and got a case of, I went and talked to Trader Joe's, and I didn't get $2 Chuck. I got some better wine, not the expensive wine, but some good Red Table wine, tasty stuff, good for Valentine's Day. This is what the theme is, right? And I got some organic free trade chocolate and put it all together with a homemade Valentine from me to you, from me and my spouse to you, actually. It's in my spouse's calligraphy. And you can have that plus your pledge premium just by coming down. You got to contribute $90 or more, and you got to come down here and get it. And it's just waiting on the table for you, and I'd love to give it to you. That's the theme, love. So keep that in mind, please. The number to call, 877-500-5266. So let's get started. Argentina's social movements, political parties, and unions marched yesterday to protest against the International Monetary Fund, Shades of 99 Seattle. They arrived in Buenos Aires to review the country's public accounts to renegotiate the external debt with President Alberto Fernandez. I bring this up in part because we need to know what the international news is and not just be so insular with all of our U.S. news, but also because people in the United States are drowning with debt, particularly the bottom third of the economy, can't catch up, is living on debt. At some point, you need to be able to ditch that debt, and there are ways to do it. And we'll have more on that in subsequent programming. We have in the past. But debt is something, the way the IMF sets it up and the way the banks set it up with your credit cards, you don't need to feel guilty if you're not able to pay it, because the instant that credit card is set up, the money is created. It's literally true. It's all a scam. And I hate to see people crushed by debt, but this is from Radio Havana, Cuba. The Union of Workers of the Popular Economy, President Esteban Castro, said, "We support the negotiations with the warning that we are not willing to pay the debt with hunger and unemployment." He also explained that the IMF is responsible for Argentina's huge foreign debt because it lent former President Mauricio Macri unviable amounts at a time when there was no production. In other words, it was a hook. And they've been had, and now the workers of Argentina are expected to suffer penury to pay off this debt. In Buenos Aires, march has moved towards the Plaza de Mayo and the National Congress, where the economy minister explained the current situation of Argentine indebtedness. And a protest spokesperson, Juan Carlos Schmid, said, quote, "The fund may change its officers, but its nature will never change. Their loans and programs have always been a tool to dominate and subordinate nations," end quote. And there's more to that article on Radio Havana, Cuba, but you get to hear it here on KBOO, and I'm the one who gets Radio Havana, Cuba, directing the U.S. secret police agencies to my laptop, and you can just hear it on the radio and don't have to worry about it. That's part of what KBOO does. We do this for you. We get the news you're not supposed to know, and that's what you're listening to right now. This is KBOO Portland. It's 10 after. Have you called yet? 877-500-5266. In a minute, I'm going to talk about the COVID-19, the Wuhan novel coronavirus. Had Henry Nyman on here a couple of weeks ago talking about that. I'm going to follow up on that a little bit. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Arun Gupta again, and we're going to talk about the primaries and the political process here in the United States. So this is going to be a really hot show. It's going to be a good show, and you don't have to wait for me to stop talking to call in, because it all goes on the KBOO podcast, kboo.fm. You can get it on Stitcher. You can get it on Apple Podcasts. You can get it on kboo.fm. So if you miss something, don't worry, you can hear it. Now, changing topics, WikiLeaks released U.S. military war logs from Afghanistan and Iraq, a cache of 250,000 diplomatic cables and 800 Guantanamo Bay detainee assessment briefs, along with the 2007 collateral murder video in which the U.S. helicopter pilots banter as they gun down civilians, including children and two Reuters journalists in the Baghdad street. The material was given to WikiLeaks in 2010 by Chelsea Manning, then Bradley Manning, a low-ranking intelligence specialist in the U.S. Army. And I'm reading you this from Chris Hedges' article on Assange and Common Dreams, and pointing it out because Assange has been accused by an enraged U.S. intelligence community of causing one of the largest compromises of classified information in the history of the United States. Manning was convicted of espionage charges in August 2013 and sentenced to 35 years in a military prison. She was granted clemency in 2017 by President Barack Obama, but this is the important part. Manning was ordered back to prison. Manning is in prison right now. Bogus charges, angry judge, refusing to testify before a grand jury in the WikiLeaks case. And that testimony is merely a repeat. It's merely harassment. It's merely a repeat of what she already told them. And she remains behind bars because she will not betray people that she knows for the grand jury abuse process. No one was ever charged for the war crimes, WikiLeaks documented, but Chelsea Manning is back in jail. I would like to thank Willa from Southwest Portland, Eddie Hill from Northwest Portland, Sovereignty Coalition. I'm not quite able to read the rest, but thank you all very much for calling in. Y'all just called 877-500-5266. I'm Texan. I get to say y'all. It's 9:13. Returning to the topic of Assange and Chelsea Manning being abused and in jail because of the hatred of the breakout of information, the fear of democracy. I'll be getting around to that theme a little later. But Assange earned the enmity of the Democratic Party establishment by publishing 70,000 hacked emails belonging to the Democratic National Committee and senior Democratic officials. The emails were copied from the accounts of John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. The Podesta emails exposed the donation of millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation by Saudi Arabia and Qatar to the major funders of Islamic State. It exposed the $657,000 that Goldman Sachs paid to Hillary Clinton to give talks, a sum so large it can only be considered a bribe. It exposed Clinton's repeated mendacity. She was caught in the emails, for example, telling the financial elites that she wanted open trade and open borders and believed Wall Street executives were best positioned to manage the economy, a statement that contradicted her campaign statements. As I've said, if I may depart from this, you can hope for change. It exposed the Clinton campaign's efforts, Hedges writes, to influence the Republican primaries to ensure that Donald Trump was a Republican nominee. It exposed Clinton's advanced knowledge of questions in a primary debate. It exposed Clinton as the principal architect of the war in Libya, a war she believed would burnish her credentials as a presidential candidate. Journalists can argue that this information, like war logs, should have remained hidden, but they can't then call themselves journalists. The Democratic and Republican leaders are united in their crusade to extradite and sentence Assange. The Democratic Party, which has attempted to blame Russia for its election loss to Trump, charges that the Podesta emails were obtained by Russian government hackers. However, James Comey, former FBI director, has conceded that those emails were probably delivered to WikiLeaks by an intermediary, and Assange has said the emails were not provided by state actors. WikiLeaks has done more than any other news organization, Chris Hedges writes, to expose the abuses of power and crimes of the American empire. In addition to the war logs and the Podesta emails, it made public the hacking tools used by the CIA and the National Security Agency and their interference in foreign elections, including French elections. It disclosed the internal conspiracy against British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn by Labour members of Parliament. It intervened to save Edward Snowden, who made public the wholesale surveillance of the American public by our intelligence agencies, from extradition to the United States by helping him flee from Hong Kong to Moscow. The Snowden leaks also revealed that Assange was on a U.S. manhunt target list. The inquiry by the Spanish court is the result of a criminal complaint filed by Assange, who accuses Morales and UC Global of violating his privacy and client-attorney confidentiality rights. The WikiLeaks founder also says the firm is guilty of misappropriation, bribery, and money laundering. So, you need journalism, you need this information, and yet Assange is being abused and held in conditions that may result in his death for that. KBOO is here to provide that information that you can actually act on as an opinion leader. That's the idea. That's why I've been doing this show. Now, I know that people respond to stories, and I know that there are many ways to influence populations. So I don't try to influence populations in the sense of a politician. What I hope to do is to give the strength of sometimes repeated detailed information to you, to give you power in your actions, in your quest for a better world, for a more moral world, for a world that has a bit of democracy in it. And I use that word a little carefully because I think if democracy were to break out in the United States, it would scare the hell out of our rulers, and who knows what they would do. I want to talk about the Wuhan novel coronavirus, now called COVID-19. And of course, it's the virus that has shut down Wuhan and Hubei province and much of China right now. I've been reading as much as I can about it. I've been trying to sort through the information coming in, for example, on Twitter. There's a lot of disinformation coming out on Twitter. Some of it is by people who hate the Chinese government and will say anything. Some of those videos are just absolutely bogus. Of course, the Chinese state is also putting its videos on YouTube and on Twitter. But right now, certain aspects of the disease are starting to pop up. For example, super spreaders. There's a metric called the R-naught, R-0. And the R-naught is how many people you can expect each individual person to spread the disease to. There's really quite a bit of difficulty at this point because actually this thing just burst upon the scene in terms of scientific inquiry. It's hard to know what the R-naught is. I've seen figures from 0.01 to 3 point something. But there are some people called super spreaders who have spread the disease to more than a dozen people. Several of these super spreaders are associated with gastric distress. There was an open pipe that resulted in the spread from one floor of an apartment to another, and I found out that was a sewer pipe, and it was sewer pipe smell that spread from one apartment to another. There wasn't a physical spread of the contents of the sewer aside from that odor, and it appears that viruses can piggyback on the particulates and or bacteria expelled as intestinal gas. Low humidity and dust can aid this spread. Therefore, if this is correct, then when the virus is possibly present, it makes sense to have disinfectant spray and should be used in all bathrooms, certainly, and preferably in all enclosed areas whenever that disease is present. Now, doing a little back of the napkin math, using these very, very rough figures and calculating the spread, which has been doubling every 5 days, it's possible to make some very clumsy projections, which would be once the virus gets established here in the United States, it's reasonable to say that it will also follow the same exponential curve at some point because it is so infectious and because it also has a peculiar quality of gestating over either 3 or 24 days or somewhere in between. And as Dr. Nyman said a couple of weeks ago on KBOO, it is rapidly mutating. So it may be that these different forms, these different types of experience with people have to do with mutations, or it could be to do with virus count. It's hard to say. But if you do that back of the napkin analysis, it would seem that the earliest possible major spread in the United States is still off by another month or so. So there's time to actually prepare for that. But the virus is already affecting the economy. It's affecting Chinese production to the point that the Chinese government is deciding that they're only going to go so far with these quarantines and they want people to get back to work. And they're saying that they've turned the corner. I really doubt that that is the case in terms of containing the disease, although I think that the Chinese government has done all of humanity a tremendous favor by trying so hard and working so vigorously on quarantines, and I'm sure it has had some effect. I'm just saying that it won't stop the COVID virus from coming to the United States. As a matter of fact, there are some cases already here, and there will be many, many more. And I'm not the only person who thinks that there is going to be extensive quarantines. The U.S. government has already selected 11 military bases for this. Reported cases just jumped to well over 1,000 deaths now, and I think 45,000 is the latest number. I'll have to check on that, of people affected by the virus. But the number of cases has changed because the reaction tests have been changed to CAT scans. And on the CAT scans, when you try to find out what this virus is doing, you see this sort of ground glass effect. And so because they ran out of reaction tests, they went to the CAT scans, and that apparently is what drove a tremendous jump in numbers over the last couple of days. The number of cases is undercounted since mild cases are unreported. The change in the numbers also showed that as people were reporting on Twitter, the Chinese government was suppressing the overall number. And this gives more credibility to some of the claims for greater numbers of deaths. I would not go with all of them. Like I said, some organizations, notably Falun Gong, are promoting accounts that are simply insulting to Chinese government because they are in a deadly fight with the Chinese government. That's a whole nother story. But deaths are being undercounted, I would say, because only the confirmed cases are being listed as COVID-19. Others are marked pneumonia or even just organ failure. And I would say with this change in information, it gives more credence to the idea that crematoria are overworked. And there have been some tweets come out from crematoria staff complaining of overwork and asking when they're going to get a day off. But as I said, there are faked videos and exaggerated claims, so not everything that you see on Twitter is correct. The World Health Organization and the CDC are trying to counter that, and I'm trying to give you as straight information as I can come up with. It's a little complex, but if you look at the overall picture, it's pretty grim. I mean, frankly, the virus shut down China. It's going to shut down the United States, I believe, at some point. Maybe not quite in the same way, and maybe not quite as quickly, but it's a very, very infectious thing. Quoting the Bangkok Post, a cruise ship which was turned away by multiple countries is now headed to dock in Cambodia. I quote that phrase because that's an example of propaganda. Bangkok Post put that out, and it fails to mention that Thailand turned away that ship after several other countries did. It was the Westerdam of the Carnival Cruise Line's Holland America division, and they did it without any evidence or report of illness aboard the ship, and it had been stranded for 2 weeks from sheer hysteria. That was propaganda from Bangkok Post, and it sounds innocent enough. It's the part that they left out, that the Thai Navy chased the Westerdam out of Bangkok port. That's how ugly things are turning with this flu. But I'm going to change coronavirus. COVID-19 is what it's called now, and cruise prices have dropped to $139 a person for a brief cruise. If you want to risk it, I don't. And of course, hand washing and sterilization should be the order of the day. In China, shaking hands is out. I'm just telling you, follow the WHO, follow the CDC. They're not going to tell you everything, but that's a good base. Wash those hands. But a person is not a virus, and no one should be targeted for race. That's something to keep in mind now, too, because we have a president who is very likely to do exactly that. You're listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This show is called Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. And I'm glad to say that I'm now joined by internationally renowned journalist Arun Gupta. We want to change topics, and we want to talk about politics. We want to talk about what's happening with the primaries. Hello, Arun, are you there?
I am.
All right. Thank you for joining me. 10 headlines appeared when I searched the Google News roll for major corporate reporting on the term Bernie Sanders. Not one of them mentioned that he won Iowa and New Hampshire. 7 of them were negative. Full-throated attacks. This is last night, about midnight. I looked at the top 20 headlines in the same manner, and only one of them mentioned that Sanders won. To find out that Sanders won by reading the New York Times article at the top of the roll, you had to read 10 paragraphs down. Quoting Danielle Ryan on RT, Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire primary, but it appears this is such a hard pill for the U.S. media to swallow, they simply decided to ignore it, or at least frame it in a way that somehow makes winning sound bad, end quote. What have you got to say, Arun?
I think that's spot on. The media definitely have extreme bias towards Bernie Sanders, that we've been seeing for quite a while. They kept just completely erasing him from all sorts of coverage, and now that he's winning, it's remarkable to see. There was one New York Times reporter, election night, Tuesday night, actually tweeted out that the top story of the night was Klobuchar's third place finish, and then the second most important story was something about Buttigieg. It's just absurd. Now, I don't think there's any conspiracy here. It's very important to recognize, but there is this kind of structural bias in the media against Bernie Sanders. And what makes it all the more remarkable and astonishing is when we compare it to 2016, to Donald Trump's campaign. Now, certainly there was this disbelief that more he was this joke and this was a vanity campaign. And of course, that was true, right?
They just couldn't turn away from him.
Yeah, but they were fascinated by him. And then it became that he is something authentic. And I think what's really going on, that there's this whole kind of culture within the corporate media that believes it is more authentically American to be a violent racist, a genocidal authoritarian, than it is to want to give everyone health care. I actually encountered this in talking to various journalists. In some of my travels to the Pacific Northwest last year, at a rally, and I ran into a New York Times reporter. I went up and introduced myself, and we were talking about the far right in Portland. I mentioned the report that Katie Shepard, when she was at the Willamette Week, had uncovered these documents showing how the police viewed Patriot Prayer as more mainstream than Antifa, right? And the response from the New York Times reporter was, well, they probably are. I know what you mean on one level, right? So he's probably thinking, well, these are working class Joes who are conservative. And it's just like, yes, on one level, you could say they're more mainstream. But then at the same time, these people are in the orbit of Nazis, are violent, racist, misogynistic, going out and having street brawls. If that's what you consider more mainstream, extreme than being in favor of tolerance and diversity, that says a lot about where you're coming from. And I've encountered that repeatedly from reporters for the mainstream media, that there is this kind of structural bias. And so I think it's not surprising when they see someone like Bernie Sanders that comes out. I mean, we could just go on and on. Like Chris Matthews essentially trying to argue that Bernie Sanders would have cheered Fidel Castro executing people in Central Park, you know, to say this stuff on air.
It comes from that sort of rabid anti-Soviet, anti-communist rhetoric. It was so much stronger in the 1980s. I remember I was able to make people just jump in the 80s and even in the 90s by standing in a line and just saying the word communist loudly. People would actually twitch.
Or someone else on MSNBC made a reference to Bernie Sanders supporters as being digital brown shirts. And of course, what's kind of interesting about all of this is that if we remember last year, after the new Congress was sworn in, there was those tweets from Ilhan Omar about Israel's influence on U.S. politics, and it's all about the Benjamins, right? And she was condemned, actually, in a resolution, and all this stuff about, oh, how she's using this anti-Semitic trope that Jews have dual loyalty. First of all, a lot of writers actually said, well, this is actually historic in terms of the Jewish community itself, this kind of internal criticism, that there is a question of, is there this pressure on the Jewish American community to be more loyal to Israel than the United States? So this is something real that exists. And then it also came out that AIPAC was bragging about the influence its money had on U.S. politics. But what we see with Bernie Sanders is kind of using his trope, but it's never questioned, right? That Bernie Sanders is Jewish. So this kind of like dual loyalty is used against him, while he's also criticized as not being really Jewish. Like references, oh, he's not really Jewish at all. You know, it's not important to him. So there's just all these incredible biases. And I think, you know, the biggest problem Bernie Sanders is going to have is not going to be from Donald Trump. It's going to be from the liberal media going forward. At this point, it's clearly he is the front runner. There's even this absurd, you know, like, oh, there is no front runner, or Buttigieg is the front runner. And, you know, so when we, if this Bernie Sanders actually becomes the nominee, my concern is you're just going to see just these vicious attacks on him and these criticisms. And the whole thing with the election, I think in a lot of ways that what we're seeing is the general election has already begun. I think that even though the Democrats have not settled on a nominee, and it may be quite some time, and there's also a lot of chatter about the fact it might be a contested convention. And, you know, this also happened in 2016.
Well, they're certainly set up for a contested convention. I mean, they've got the superdelegates, and they could just wipe out the people's choice. You know, and I want to do a thought experiment here for a second. Imagine Pete Buttigieg for a second, rather than Sanders, had won Iowa with a 6,000 vote margin. And imagine what would happen if the mainstream media had tried to say that Sanders had won it instead with the irrelevant state delegate equivalent tally, which measures only who gets to vote for Iowa primary officials. Or imagine if Pete or Amy had won New Hampshire. Would the headline say, Sanders in third, wow, what a surge? You know, no, this treatment is reserved for the man who promotes a mild FDR-style socialism, which has apparently terrified all of the mainstream media, and you aren't allowed to vote for that, not and have your victories counted.
Yeah. You know, I think what we see in the mainstream media is a lot of reporters who, if they don't like worship billionaires and the plutocrats, they think that they play this necessary and important role in politics and the economy. The way when Bloomberg, I noticed when he announced that suddenly that he's going to be running for president, that suddenly there were all these fawning opinion pieces by editorial columnists about how great he was and how important it was that he was going to run. And yet I cannot even think of one editorial columnist, at a mainstream newspaper who is pro Bernie Sanders, which is just simply astonishing. You know, there's the book Manufacturing Consent by Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman, they went through every single opinion piece that the Washington Post and the New York Times published over something like a 6-year period. And it was something like 87 opinion pieces, and not one of them actually was supportive of the Sandinistas in this illegal war that the U.S. was waging against them. Not one of these opinion pieces were saying, hey, this is a legitimate government, the U.S. is carrying out this murderous war, illegally mining its harbors, supporting this death squad force, the Contras, that have killed tens of thousands of Nicaraguans, and this is completely criminal, crimes against humanity. And basically, every single opinion piece was about how should the Sandinistas be removed or contained. We could do an exercise like that today. And of course, fairness and accuracy in reporting, people should check out their website if they're
absolutely
not familiar with it,
fair.org. Well, you know, you're reminding me of that time. And I was shocked at the time to see Stephen Kinzer, after all the good work that he had done and his novel about the fruit industry in Central America, going down to Nicaragua and then sitting in the Managua Hilton with Obando y Bravo and just spewing propaganda day after day into New York Times. He was the Judith Miller before Judith Miller.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it, that this is very much a propagandistic coverage. What we're going to see for the next few months is a parallel with 2016. You saw the Never Trumper Republicans. Now it's about the Never Bernie. Thankfully, we're seeing this expose of Bloomberg for who he really is. That was interesting in and of itself. CNN started attacking the reporter who unearthed that audio tape. I forget his name, but I know he was on Democracy Now! Yesterday. It was more about how did he get it and whose interest is he serving because he supports Sanders. It's just like, who cares? This is just incredibly crude racism, where Bloomberg is saying that 95% of murderers and murder victims are young men of color. This is basically a white nationalist lie. You can go to the Department of Justice statistics, and this is simply not true.
The Democrats just couldn't stand to have the Republicans have the corner on the white supremacy vote, because the fact that Bloomberg is let in the first place has booted out people of color who participated in the process and have a legitimate place on the debate stage in order to change the rules entirely and just give up on all of that and all the work that they have done, kick them off and put a white billionaire on the stage with, as you say, his history of racist actions and comments.
There was that comment that came out. There was also this other one. We need to tax poor people more because they're so stupid they keep buying soda, so let's take their money away from them. This is who Michael Bloomberg is. He's this racist plutocrat. I live in New York. I saw what he did for 12 years. And then he outright lies like Trump. Oh, we cut stop and frisk by 95%. He increased it by 600%. And he was attacking the judge who eventually ruled that it was racist and violated people's constitutional rights. And it's important to remember that I was in New York. I've been profiled by cops before and forced to show ID and considered a suspect. But traumatizing as it can be to have these racist, aggressive, often violent cops grab you and throw you up against the wall, which is what he was saying is what we need to do. They were using a stop and frisk to bust young men for marijuana possession, and tens of thousands of young men every single year were being busted for marijuana possession. It's like 80% were men of color.
We're talking about this culture within a culture. It's like we have a culture in the corporate news media, and like you say, it's not necessarily a conspiracy. This is just the way these people are brought up to reject anything that has the least whiff of socialism. And one thing I would criticize Bernie for would be he uses the least whiff of socialism. He doesn't say that much about it. I mean, he does now and then. He's honest about it, but I think he understands that he can only say that word so often. And really, it's just FDR stuff.
We saw it with debate after debate after debate, where it was all about, are you going to raise taxes to pay for health care? Ignoring the fact that Medicare for All would bring down costs. Never once was a question asked of candidates who oppose Medicare for All. Why is it okay to let tens of thousands of people die every year from treatable conditions? Why is it okay to allow 500,000 people a year to go into medical bankruptcy, to have their financial lives ruined from these astronomical medical bills for very treatable conditions? That is completely ignored. It's all this right-wing talking a point about how your taxes are going to go up. I felt Bernie could actually push back against that and say, let's privatize the roads. And when you want to take your car out, when you get to the end of the block, you have to fill out all these forms, you have to get pre-approval, and then you have to pay $100 to turn on the next street. And then you go half a mile, and again, there are all these forms you have to fill out, and you got to pay $500 to go on the next street. Or we pay into collective pool and everyone can go anywhere that they want, which is how the roads work. Everyone is taxed, whether through federal taxes or through gasoline taxes, to pay for the road that then everyone uses. Yeah, you could privatize it. And I was just in Texas reporting on the border and using these privatized toll roads, which are absolutely ridiculous. They privatize a lot of the public
highways. Leave it to Texans.
All it is a way to extract money, and none of this is actually ever even entered the discussion at all, that we have the worst medical system in the developed world.
We really do. You know, and with that, I'm going to have to leave it at that because we have run out of time. Arun Gupta, thank you so much for joining us. Is there a website that you would like to direct KBOO listeners to?
I have a Patreon account, Patreon Arun Gupta. They can also follow me on Twitter at Arun Indy. I'm also very active on Facebook and have been posting a lot of my thoughts and writings about the presidential election.
Yes, you have, and I thank you for that. It's ARUNGUPTA if you're trying to look that up. And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. I am out of time. We're going out to you via 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.